There's a new accessibility collective lead in town. Our amazing previous collective lead, DP, has stepped down, and I am super excited to continue her legacy. Once again, my name is Nicole, and I am an able-bodied third-year university student at UBC. I'm really passionate about creating safe spaces for marginalized groups, and I'm dedicated to bringing you folks content surrounding accessibility. Today's episode is about accessibility in the realm of dietetics and nutrition. We have a special guest, and we'll be covering topics from eating disorders to dysphagia to accessibility within grocery stores. So today's special guest is my friend Rachel. She is a friend that I met in high school, and she now goes to McGill and is studying dietetics. We brought her on today because of her background in dietetics and her passion for bringing light to removing stigma from eating disorders. So hi, Rachel.
Hi, thank you for having me.
No problem. We're super excited to have you. Can you tell me a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I'm currently going into my third year of dietetics at McGill. I became interested in dietetics. I've been interested in nutrition my whole life, really, but with some sort of past disordered eating experiences, I decided to pursue dietetics in the hopes of someday providing support to people with disordered eating and eating disorders, as well as looking to change messaging surrounding diet culture and weight stigma.
Awesome. That sounds really, really meaningful, especially in a society that's super focused around like ever-changing trendy body types and just general like diet culture. Can you tell me a little bit about what other initiatives you've taken at McGill for dietetics?
Yeah, so I'm also an events volunteer at Safely Connected McGill, formerly the Eating Disorder Resource and Support Center. The goal of the center is to provide peer support to people struggling with disordered eating or eating disorders, and to sort of fill an accessibility gap. And our goal specifically in the events branch is to put on events that highlight the voices of people who do not get enough representation and who struggle with getting care for disordered eating and eating disorders because they don't necessarily look like someone that quote unquote should have an eating disorder, or they have an eating disorder that there's less awareness about. And that is a goal and sort of an organization that I'm very grateful to be a part of and that I have learned a lot from in these last 8 months or so that I've been volunteering there.
Oh, whoa, 8 months.
Yeah.
I didn't know you were volunteering there for 8 months.
Yeah.
Felt like three. Yeah, so I kind of want to ask you, like, what is dietetics and nutrition?
Yeah, so when I say I'm studying dietetics, oftentimes people will look back at me with a confused look on their face because it's not a word that we commonly hear. But basically what it means is a nutrition professional, so a registered dietitian, that has the authority to prescribe diet orders to patients and sort of oversee that diet order for that patient. So we are given sort of the permission from like the board of like medical doctors or whatever, and we have professional orders in each province, and there are very strict requirements to become a registered dietitian. So you need to take specific classes, and you also have to do a certain number of hours of internship, and then you have to write an RD exam. And once you pass the exam, you can become an order of part of the professional order of dietitians within your province. And that will allow you to work many different places. Dietitians most commonly will be found in the hospital, so clinical inpatient dietitians who prescribe diet orders for people in the hospital with all kinds of different diagnoses.
Yeah.
They can also work in outpatient, and they can also be managers of the food service in the actual hospital. So planning the menu and taking into consideration any special accessibility needs of different people in the hospital with respect to food. And they can also work in sort of more public health, and as well they can do more sort of research.
Okay. So to like my understanding, dietetics is a part of healthcare, but it's a pretty new subsection of healthcare.
It is relatively new. Yeah, I believe, if I remember correctly, the first sort of healthy eating guides first came in, I believe, either during or just after the Second World War. So that's sort of the timeline of when, around after the Second World War was sort of when we started realizing more and more how much a role that nutrition plays in health and how much we sort of need nutrition professionals outside of doctors, because doctors get like one class in nutrition. So that was when we sort of became integrated into more healthcare professionals.
Yeah, and like with really any healthcare subsection, there is some special considerations that need to be made for anyone that isn't an able-bodied person, whether they have like an invisible or a visible disability. So that's kind of what brings me to today's episode. We're talking about the accessibility aspect within the realm of dietetics and nutrition. So like what kind of is the role of accessibility in dietetics? Because it's a pretty broad topic just in terms of accessibility for people with eating disorders, what it's like accessing healthcare for dietetics, and what it's like to be a disabled person who just needs to go to the grocery store but doesn't necessarily have the ability to like chop up vegetables or create a healthy meal.
For sure. So it depends on the specific area that the dietitian is working in. But just speaking broadly, generally, if you're working either an inpatient or outpatient, you'll have an introductory interview with the client. And when we're conducting that interview, we are concerned, yes, with the client's previous diet history, but we're even more concerned with finding out information surrounding their, like, the non-nutrition aspect of food.
Okay, so kind of like what their life is like and
yeah,
how that
exactly
affects food.
Exactly.
Okay, that's really important, just because, you know, like, you know, everyone's lifestyle very much so affects their ability to access food and
yeah,
what their health profile is like.
Yeah.
Like it boils down to so much more than just a few numbers on a page with
yeah,
calories and whatnot.
You really need to understand very, very well the context of that person's life before you can even begin to create a diet plan for that person. Because if you create a diet plan that does not fit within the context of that person's life, then A, it's not going to be followed, and B, oftentimes it will show that you are not listening to them, you do not care about their problems, and they're going to see that as a really, really bad experience. And if that person has either more visible or invisible disabilities that affect their ability to either prepare or actually eat and digest food, and you create a diet plan for them that does not take that into consideration, that is going to be very hurtful and discouraging for that person. So it's something that we really, really treat with the utmost importance and is always considered before we create diet plans for people.
That's really, really amazing to hear. I haven't personally had any experiences with dietitians, but I definitely would appreciate just the considerations like I would need as an able-bodied person that is also like a pretty busy person. Like I don't necessarily have the time to like cook every single day, and I know that someone with a physical disability may not have the resources to like go grocery shopping and then haul a bunch of stuff home, or like be able to cook these really elaborate meals, but they still have a lot of nutritional needs that need to be filled. And I guess that's kind of where you guys come in terms of just filling in those gaps and being creative on how to work around that. How easy would you say it is to like get a hold of a dietitian nowadays?
Well, I wouldn't say I am an expert on this by any means, because I'm still a few years away from being able to take the exam and be a practicing dietitian. However, generally, if you are at the hospital and seeing a dietitian is sort of seen as necessary for whatever reason you're in the hospital for, you will have a consultation with the dietitian while you're in the hospital. Talking about outpatient, it generally varies whether dietetic services are covered by insurance. Sometimes if you have a condition where a doctor, for example, you go to your family doctor, they can write you a prescription to go see a dietitian if they feel that that is what you need. And then with that, you would go see a dietitian. So I suppose
there's a lot of hoops you gotta jump through.
Yeah.
Okay, and that's kind of just like a general accessibility issue within healthcare, is oftentimes it's not as easy as just realizing you have a problem and you need to see someone. There's a lot of references to be made and a lot of people that you've got to talk to before you can really see the professional that you need.
Yeah.
That's pretty frustrating.
Yeah.
Like, I've got a dietary issue and I need advice, like, ASAP, but there's a bunch of hoops I got to go through. I feel like there's this weird culture that we have where you could go to a doctor and be like, hey, I need help creating a diet plan and I need to see a dietitian. And they're like, what are you talking about? Just like eat healthier, when in reality, it's like so much more complex than like eating a bunch of fruits and vegetables.
Yeah. And I would say this is just based on my understanding of the relationship between dietetics and sort of doctors. Again, I have not actually done any internships in hospitals yet, so I do not have any firsthand experience. However, I would say that dietetics is undervalued as a healthcare profession. I don't think people fully grasp the amount that we need to learn. And most of what we learn in school as dietitians is not actually about nutrition. It is about the human element, and it is about sort of all these different contexts that people may be in. For example, there's
dysphagia.
For example, this is, you know, something that most people probably wouldn't even think about, but like there's a condition called dysphagia, which is basically the inability to swallow like normal foods.
Mm-hmm.
And it can be for all different kinds of reasons. It can be because, you know, someone's older, but it could be for any reason. Like, there's so many reasons why you couldn't swallow regular food. Like, if you got wisdom teeth out, right, you have to follow a modified diet. So, especially in the hospital, there's so many reasons why someone would need modified foods, because they cannot physically chew and swallow regular foods. So that's part of what we study. We study, like, they're literally, like, there's a scale for different food textures.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not just foods, it's liquids as well.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, if someone needs a liquid that is a certain texture on the scale, then we have to add that thickener and we have to put it in a little like device that measures how long it takes to like drip on the device. And that's how we know that it's the proper texture for that person.
That's very, very specific, but I guess it is super necessary.
Yeah, so
just like for you to be able to receive nutrients and experience food.
Yeah, so
the way you need.
So most of our degree is really talking about the fact that accessibility to food varies for every single person for so many different reasons. And given that we have to serve many different people from many different walks of life, we need to be aware of every single one of those issues for why a person might need help with their food intake.
Yeah. We're going to take a break right now, guys. We will come back to you, and then we're going to talk a little bit about examples of accessibility issues within dietetics and kind of dive a little deeper.
Do you love being caffeinated? And do you hate that greedy, soulless international conglomerates are succeeding in the cutthroat world of coffee? Sounds like local coffee roasters Trek Coffee is for you. Trek Coffee is 100% indigenous and military veteran owned and operated. Let's keep small businesses thriving. Stop by Sunshine Convenience on 4th, the Super Value on Commercial, or Grocery Checkout in the Nest to pick up some Trek Coffee today. CITR is powered by Guayaquil Yerba Mate. Yerba mate is a naturally caffeinated drink that comes in a variety of formats, from loose leaf to cans to bottles. Yes, the yellow ones. Guayaquil Mate is all organic, non-GMO, and sure to make you come to life. Guayaquil is more than just a yerba mate brand. They're focused on personal, social, ecological, and cultural growth through their commitment to regenerative practices, which includes stewarding the South Atlantic rainforest and partnering with indigenous South American communities through the production of yerba mate. Visit guayaquil.com. GUAYAKI.com to learn more and find this delicious drink near you. Or stop by CITR station on UBC campus for a free yerba mate can.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9 FM. Hi, Rachel.
Hi.
Let's dive right back in. So I kind of want to talk about, like, accessibility within dietetics, because there's so many different aspects to it. There's visible and invisible disabilities, like Crohn's disease. Diabetes kind of goes both ways, in the sense that some people live with diabetes and it's pretty invisible for the most part, but then there's some people that need an insulin pump on them at all times. And then there's kind of things like eating disorders and what those look like versus what they don't actually look like, and that how that kind of affects receiving help. But yeah, and then there's things too, like allergies and how you can't eat certain foods and you need certain accommodations. And for a lot of people with really severe allergies, you can't even, like, eat at certain restaurants because they're just so severe. Let's talk a little bit about what an eating disorder, quote unquote, looks like.
This is more so diving into my work at Safely Connected, and also just sort of personal interest. But something that is talked about very often is the fact that if you do not fit what an eating disorder is supposed to look like, you generally have difficulty accessing care.
Yeah, for sure. There definitely is, like, a massive ideal, or not an ideal, but kind of just like an idea of what someone with an eating disorder, quote unquote, looks like.
Eating disorders are a mental illness,
mm-hmm.
and they can be, oftentimes we say that dieting is one of the highest risk factors for developing an eating disorder. However, usually people will have to sort of already be predisposed to having an eating disorder. And dieting is sort of what is the catalyst to developing that eating disorder. However, when we're talking about body size and accessing care for eating disorders, an eating disorder has nothing to do with what you look like, right? It's about your behaviors. So we have sort of this representation in the media that, for example, people with anorexia have to be really, really thin. And I believe in the DSM, it's still a BMI requirement to be under a certain BMI.
Is it actually?
I believe so, yes.
That's crazy.
Yeah. But the reality is, people of all body weights can have anorexia. It has nothing to do with your body weight. and the fact that people are, you know, facing stigma, accessing eating disorder care because that health provider has decided that they don't look like a person that's supposed to have an eating disorder, aka they're not a thin white woman, is just absolutely ridiculous.
Yeah, that's bonkers. I mean, we know that, like, yeah, that absolutely does affect how you get help, because it's like, well, the way I look has absolutely no correlation with what I'm going through.
Yeah. And again, any person of any body weight can have an eating disorder. Fat people can have eating disorders. And oftentimes when fat people with anorexia, for example, try to access eating disorder care, they are told that, like, you know, they don't belong. Or it's assumed when they say they have an eating disorder that it's a binge eating disorder.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, that just comes from the, like, weight stigma that is baked into, like, every aspect of our society and our healthcare system. But the fact is that any person of any body weight, of any gender, of any anything, any human can have an eating disorder, and the way that you look has nothing to do with whether you have an eating disorder or not.
Let's talk a little bit about less common eating disorders and common eating disorders, and just about how easy it is to access care for those. So do you know any about any less common eating disorders?
Yes. So some of the ones that I know off the top of my head, there's something called avoidant restrictive food intake disorder.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we actually had an event with Safely Connected. One on the panel had, it's called ARFID, so they had ARFID, and they spoke about their experience. And pretty much what it is you are avoiding foods, but it's not for the same reasons that someone with anorexia would avoid eating foods. You know, maybe something about the texture of the food just really, really bothers that person.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens is that person has a very small pool of foods that they actually feel comfortable eating.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem with that is that eating a diverse range of foods is one of the best ways to make sure that we are getting all of our nutrient requirements.
Mm-hmm.
So if you are only comfortable eating like 5 to 10 foods, that's not really healthy behavior.
It's not conducive with being able to have a relatively healthy diet that covers like all the nutrient bases.
Yeah, and it also, I mean, it impacts, the thing about eating disorders is they sort of like take over your life.
Mm-hmm.
And that is one of the more sort of insidious parts of them. And if you're someone that struggles with an avoidant food intake disorder, that limits, you know, food is not just, we don't just put it in our bodies because we need the nutrients. It is social, it is cultural, it brings joy and all these things. So if you're struggling with something like ARFID, that will severely sort of limit all of those aspects of food.
Yeah, it is definitely super interesting to think about how people with certain eating disorders may not feel comfortable practicing certain cultural elements around food. Because I know that as a Chinese person, food is a really massive part of our culture. And I can't even imagine what it would be like to have to struggle with being able to consume certain parts of my culture.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, so I kind of want to also talk about, like, what it takes to be healthy. Because the idea of health is, especially around dietetics, is pretty abstract because, as we all know, like, no one body is the same. And to take, like, a universal dietetics approach to every body would just not be useful.
Yeah, so this is going back again to what I was saying about our initial intake interviews.
Mm-hmm.
we want to know just as much about the person's, the context surrounding eating for that person. That is just as or more interesting or important to us as the actual food that they're putting in their mouth.
Mm-hmm.
So there are any sort of number of things that we need to consider when we're putting together a diet plan for a person. For example, if a person is in a wheelchair and has no one to drive them to the grocery store, they only have access to sort of convenience store foods, we can still give advice to that person. Health is not binary. Healthy food is not binary. But we can give advice to that person depending on what they're asking us for. Generally, the plans that are given to patients, what's the key element when writing a diet plan is, what is the patient asking me for?
Mm-hmm.
And what they're asking you for will depend on their context surrounding food.
Mm-hmm.
So if a person is, going back, I guess, to the wheelchair example, if they're in a wheelchair and they can only access convenience store foods, but they want to try to eat healthier, like they don't feel good about what they're eating right now and like it's affecting their self-esteem, and they're asking for tips on how to eat healthier so that they can feel better, what have you. You can do, you know, things like, you have to consider, okay, what do they have access to? What do they have access to in terms of like a grocery store? Do they have access to a grocery store or a convenience store? You have to consider what appliances they have access to. You have to consider what physical motions of cooking that they are able to do.
Mm-hmm.
If a person only has use of one arm, you're not going to recommend recipes that require a lot of chopping,
mm-hmm.
right? So just because we have a Canada's food guide that is very general on a population level, what you should be eating,
mm-hmm.
that does not mean that that works for every person's specific context.
Yeah, and I know that people with prosthetic limbs, like people with prosthetic legs, burn more energy just by like walking around from day to day, because it requires more effort and more physical strain, and they probably in their diet plan need supplements for that, like more carbs or more sugars or whatnot.
Yeah, both energy requirements as well as, you know, I guess individual food groups are unique to each individual based on their unique bodies and also their unique physical environment.
I know that having a disability also definitely just affects your like day-to-day life. Like people with Crohn's disease and people with diabetes sometimes choose to disclose to their employer like, hey, I have diabetes, or hey, I have Crohn's disease and it's necessary for me to take X amount of minutes out of the day to go do things that I need to do to prevent something terrible from happening that's like a result of my disease. Like people with diabetes may need to take 10 minutes out of their day to take their insulin shot, or people with Crohn's may need some time out of their day to be able to go and do the things they need to do. Like Crohn's is an inflammatory bowel disease, and if it's not taken care of properly, it could lead to so many awful things like malnutrition and fatigue and diarrhea, abdominal pain and whatnot. So it's more than just your diet plan. Like, it is your life.
Yeah.
Because what we do in our day-to-day life is also, like, affected by what we eat, and what we eat affects our day-to-day life. It's this circle.
Yeah.
It's really just this circle effect.
And I think in our current sort of hustle grind culture now,
mm-hmm.
it's actually ironic because like I've heard from family members in nursing and like heard from people who have done their internships, healthcare professionals are often like never given time to actually eat.
What?
Like you're just going, and it's like we're, you know, taking care of what everyone else is eating, but mm-hmm. you're not actually given time to eat yourself. And I think we just sort of throw food to the side in terms of because there's work to be done or whatever. But I think we all need to recognize that, I guess, not everyone has that privilege. Like, having a disability that is related to your diet, you are going to have different needs in terms of when and what and how you are eating.
Mm-hmm.
And even just regular people, like, we need to be given time to eat throughout the day. And we need to all sort of consider that everyone has their own individual needs mm-hmm. when it comes to food. And since food is something that we're doing so often all the time, if you are someone that has a disability that is related to your diet, it can be a real difficult thing to deal with in your life.
Really, just for anyone, like for an everyday person, but especially for those who require an accessibility standpoint, like people with eating disorders probably need extra considerations on just how they approach food a day. Like, they may need to take a more intuitive eating approach. And Rachel, do you want to kind of give a definition of intuitive eating?
This is my own definition, mm-hmm. I guess. Intuitive eating essentially is... Well, I think I will give a definition of what disordered eating is.
Mm-hmm.
And disordered eating is eating in any way that is not eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what intuitive eating is just eating when you're hungry and stopping when you're full, period. If anyone is interested, there's a book called Intuitive Eating, and it goes into detail about, I believe it's the 11 elements of intuitive eating. I found it was a really life-changing book. But yeah, with that being said, and again, that definition of disordered eating is not to freak anybody out, because of course we all eat for reasons other than the fact that we're hungry all the time. It is totally part of the human experience. But when we are routinely, consistently eating for reasons other than the fact that we are hungry, or like not eating when we're hungry, or not stopping when we're full, or things like that, if that is something that consistently and often you are doing, that is when it's sort of like, okay, maybe this is something I need to talk about with someone, or I need to reflect on, or I need to sort of change something in the way I'm going about my life.
I feel like a lot of people are also not super aware of, like, there aren't a whole lot of conversations talking about, like, why we eat. So yeah, like, there's intuitive eating, and people with eating disorders may need the space to intuitively eat, whereas some people with eating disorders may need schedules to eat to help them, and it all just very much so is what we need is on an individual level and on an individual basis. And I don't know if there's a ton of accessibility within just everyday life in terms of being able to cater to that. Like, I think about high schools, and someone with diabetes may need to eat sugar at a certain point of a day, but like their teacher has like a no food policy within their classroom. Yeah. Like, what happens there, you know?
Yeah.
So we're gonna take a break right now, but we're gonna come back and talk a little bit about what Rachel does with dietetics and accessibility, and then we're gonna talk a little bit about some good things on the horizon when it comes to accessibility and dietetics.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Feeling lost in the lonely, meaningless cyberweb? Looking to connect with other users? Then plug in to a CITR collective. Meet users who are compatible with your interests and passions. CITR's mainframe offers 9 unique collectives. News, arts, accessibility, sports, persons of color, indigenous, gender empowerment, LGBTQ2SIA+, and music affairs. CITR collectives are where you can make great radio, great friends, and avoid the abject loneliness of life in the cyber void. Loneliness.
loneliness.
Hey, welcome back. I'm Nicole, and you're listening to All Access Pass, brought to you by CITR 101.9. So, Rachel, can you talk to us a little bit about kind of just like what's going on with dietetics and accessibility?
For sure. So I think the word accessibility is and always will be connected to dietetics inextricably. Is that the word? I think inextricably.
I think that's the word, yeah.
To dietetics.
Yeah, for sure.
Because food, of course, there are many physical elements to food and eating. There is the physical preparation of food. There is the physical act of going and getting food. And of course, there's actually just the physical act of chewing and swallowing and keeping the food down. And anywhere along that path of the food getting from the grocery store or even the farm into your stomach, anywhere along that chain, there can be a disruption, and oftentimes that disruption can be due to a more visible or invisible disability. And as dietitians, we are trained to constantly be thinking about that path from the farm to the stomach, really.
Yeah, and it extends so much more than just beyond that. Like, even when it gets to the body, like, there's other things you gotta consider, too.
Like, oh, yeah, of course. Well, yeah. I mean, pooping, like, for real, like...
Yeah, and, like, whether or not you can process certain
sugars. Yeah, digestive... And... Yeah, of course. I mean...
It's so complicated.
Yeah, and people with Crohn's or with IBS, that is a huge, like, digestive issues. That is a huge part of it as well. And so... Yeah, as dietitians, we are trained to think about that entire chain of events and to be aware of anywhere in that chain of events that something can go wrong, and to be able to offer guidance to a person if their issues with food are coming from a disruption in that chain.
I think it's really interesting that you guys consider more than just, or you folks consider more than just like the actual nutrition aspect. Like, I think it's really, it brings me a lot of hope to know that you folks aren't just like, okay, hard facts, calories, nutrition, amino acids. Like, there's so much more to it. It's such a complex and intertwined thing, and I think that the fact that there is this conversation about every aspect surrounding food considers accessibility so much more.
Yeah, and again, I think that's the biggest misconception between dietitians and other quote-unquote nutrition professionals that just get, like, certificates online. They are really only given the basics on nutrition, which, to be honest, is not... Nutrition basics are not that complicated to understand, but the entire, all the moving pieces of what a person eats and why, it is so much bigger than just amino acids. It is huge, and it is multidisciplinary, and like it's, and I agree that it is really cool that we are being trained to consider those things. I do think that, you know, there can always be improvement. Again, I'm only halfway through my degree, but we have not really sort of spoken that much about eating disorders or weight stigma, which I think is extremely pertinent and relevant to the field of nutrition. So... there's always room to grow, but I do believe that the education of nutrition professionals really does consider accessibility to food very, very highly.
Yeah, that is really, really awesome to hear. I think it's really amazing that you folks
are on an upwards trajectory towards making dietetics something that considers everybody. Can you talk to me a little bit about the volunteer work that you do and just about the organization and also specifically what you do? Because it sounds like there is a big push towards making this conversation around food and accessibility just generally more open to the public.
For sure. So a little bit of history on Safely Connected. A few years ago, SMU, which is sort of the student government at McGill that like funds student services and clubs and stuff like that,
mm-hmm.
Defunded the eating disorder support that was in place.
Mm-hmm.
So I believe he's the president, I believe that's his title, Cody, created the Eating Disorder Resource and Support Center, which now is called Safely Connected. And what it does is it provides peer support. So we have peer support groups as well as one-on-one forums.
Mm-hmm.
And we also do events, which I'm involved in. And the goal is for this service is very accessible to people who may not have access to eating disorder services otherwise. And that is huge, especially in the university context, which can be a very easy place to develop an eating disorder. And it just provides a safe space for a person to be able to talk about their experience with eating disorders or disordered eating, and also to be guided to accessible resources if that is something they are interested in. There is no push for those people to seek out those resources, but if it's something they're interested in, that can be something we guide them towards. But really the goal is to just make eating disorder care more accessible to everybody, regardless of income, gender, body weight, anything. And I think sort of, and as well, sorry, I'm involved in the events branch, and our sort of goal is to create events that center voices that generally have difficulty accessing eating disorder care. So as I mentioned, we had someone with ARFID come and talk about their experience. We've had events on the trans experience with eating disorders. And so that is the goal, to have more discussions about accessibility surrounding eating disorders. And I think sort of more, I guess, community-run organizations is, it's really cool to see, because unfortunately oftentimes healthcare, even though, you know, in Canada it's a lot better than other places, it is inaccessible for a lot of folks for many different reasons. And I think having more community sort of peer led free accessible resources like this, it's really cool to see people taking that initiative. And I personally have learned so much about like less common eating disorders and, you know, accessibility within eating disorder care while volunteering there. So it is very encouraging to see organizations like this existing in the world.
Yeah, for sure. I also definitely think that this organization absolutely helps remove a lot of stigma surrounding eating disorders and talking about eating disorders. I definitely feel that kind of like cloud or that shadow around eating disorders, like, oh, that's not something a lot of us want to talk about. And just general like food problems, because like it's food, but in reality there's so many barriers to being able to access food and the nutrients that we need. And it's really amazing to hear that this organization kind of challenges those narratives.
Yeah, and I think in general, as a society, we are talking a bit more now about things like food deserts and
What's a food desert?
So a food desert basically is an area where a grocery store is not accessible basically within walking distance or like with public transit,
even, I see.
You know, easy to use public transit.
Mm-hmm.
And they're a big problem, and they're a big part of food insecurity sort of within North America. And that really plays into if someone has a physical disability and they live in a food desert, like,
yeah, getting, like getting food groceries
is not going to be easy for them at all.
It's nearly impossible.
Especially, I mean, talking in Quebec, like, in the middle of winter, like, forget about it. Like, it's impossible to be able to access, quote-unquote, healthy foods.
Yeah, so I don't think there's really any clear-cut answer to making dietetics and nutrition and just food in general more accessible to everybody. But it sounds like there is a really great trajectory with this field of dietetics. And I do sincerely hope that it continues to create this conversation around accessing food and accessing what we need.
Thanks again for tuning into this week's episode of All Access Pass. We'll see you again next week on Thursday, 6 to 7 p.m. Bye. Your folks might understand you. Just move on up toward your destination. Though you may find from time to time. It's a
and eyes closed, I felt pretty. In the shoes and the dress, confused by the rest, could he hear me? Lydia wears a cross, says she's never gonna take it off. We sit back to back, listening to Jesus Christ. Superstar soundtrack. I'd be a believer if it was all just song and dance. I'd be a believer if I thought we had a chance. Eyes to the board, thoughts to our Lord. Diana, Miss Brown was keeping score. Vivian's holding on, but singing every single word wrong on the parade float. Just a child in a leotard beneath a technicolor dream coat. I'd be a believer. It was all just song and dance. Be a believer if I thought we had a chance.
This is Audie from Broken Bones, and you're listening to CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. And all I'm going to say to you is, fuck off and die.
bad, I just wanna be bad. Throw this shit with everybody, me, I ain't for everybody.
Tell you, baby, that I'm coming over, coming up. Wanna mind even that I know you. Pheromones in your douche and now, douche and now. Smells great, but I see you clear, see you. Tell me, hold on a second longer, I can tell you you're getting closer, yeah. In your moment, when I kiss you there. Where you going, let me get you there.
Baby,
you like a fly. I'm just trying to get you for the red eye, mean you right on night. I'm just pitching up like a tent. You just give it up like it's Lent. I don't give a fuck about your friends. Why they on the fence? Grass greener where we stand. Talking where the brains help green wings as you moved on to better thing. Whatever, man. Blue shells missing you. Well, you in second place. Never had a friend. Low blows, high road. No, I took the ladder ride.